All right, we would like to welcome everyone to Planning Commission tonight. We are going to start with a pledge by Commissioner Van Langeveld.
Repeat with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Van Langeveld. Do we have anyone here who has a public comment that doesn't have something to do with one of the agenda items? Seeing none, we will close the public comments and move to item number 3 on the agenda, which is the consideration of a conditional use permit for a 32-foot driveway located at 903 Winter Lane. And Zach Lamano, the applicant, is Zach here? No.
No.
All right.
No
Mackenzie.
One's representing them. Okay, so 903 Winter Lane is located within the Ridge subdivision. There we go. So in the Ridge subdivision, this lot is currently not developed. They have submitted a building permit application and had it approved recently for a 30-foot driveway because, as you all know, our city code allows for up to a 30-foot driveway without a conditional use permit and up to 40 feet with a conditional use permit. So these folks would like to request a 32-foot driveway. Whoa. As you can see here on the site plan, the reason they chose 32 feet and not wider was because they have a property line on one side, which they have to remain 3 feet away from per our standard city code. And then a water meter in the park strip to the north, and they have to be a minimum of 5 feet away from that water meter. So they wanted to come in and move the water meter so that they could extend their driveway bigger, but the Ridges subdivision has a moratorium that we cannot dig into the asphalt for 5 years after it was finished. So for about 5 years, 4 years or so, they're not going to be able to expand any further or move their water meter. In the future, they may revisit that, but as of right now, they're happy and satisfied with the 32-foot. And the Development Review Committee is recommending approval of the conditional use permit for the 32-foot driveway at 903 Winter Lane with no conditions. So, if you guys have any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mackenzie. Does anyone have any questions for staff? Or any comments on this application? In the motion, it said 38-foot wide driveway. It is 32, though.
Yeah. Packet week was rough last week.
Oh, it's... Hey, I just rolled in here
you
late
all saw.
From the train. So.
Yes, or, it's a 32-foot driveway.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
So this is an individual lot specific conditional use. It's not for other similar lots in the development.
Just this lot.
And then, I'm sorry if I missed this, why do they want it to be bigger than what code allows?
Because if you look at where they have their house, they have placed their house strategically right there for views because it's in between, the deck is in between two roof lines. And so they have room on the one side to the south to scoot the whole house over and allow for better access without bumping into that water meter, straight access to the drive, to the garage, and to their RV pad on the side. But I tried to persuade them before they came through the conditional use permit, and they didn't want to give up the views. So to make it a little bit more accessible for them to pull in and out of their driveway, they were happy with 32 feet.
And then they're meeting all other requirements for setbacks on property lines and every other place.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I actually have signed off on their building permit, and so has Larry Palmer, our building official. We're just waiting on them to pay for it to be issued. And then this will come into effect on top of the building permit. So.
Okay. Anyone else?
Why the triangle piece to the south? Why not just square it off there?
Will you say that one more time?
Why the extra portion to the south of the entrance? Why not just square off the driveway?
I don't know. I have to look at it a little closer. Hold on, let me see what you're talking about. Oh, the 3 feet?
Yeah.
So that's a requirement for our city code. They have to be at the property line, so typically the back of sidewalk, they have to be a minimum of 3 feet into the property. And then from that point, they can curve out and connect back into the property line and do flat work back, but they have to have a minimum of 3 feet away for their drive approach. And that's just our standard. Does that answer your question?
No.
Cool.
I don't know how to describe.
Well,
so are you talking about this little area right here, this little triangle?
It's not showing up on the screen.
Oh, you can't see the arrow
right here.
Does my thing work?
Really, the 2 feet.
Here, let me annotate.
Whoa.
Exactly.
Are you talking right here?
They could make it.
It's like this,
they
didn't
have
this right here?
Right there.
Why are they coming out this way?
Yeah, why is it not just a straight
line? Making this a straight line. I guess that's what.
Oh, I don't know. I also said that, but I think if they made it into a straight line out, then they have a 3 feet little strip that they have to maintain and mow or whatever they choose to do with it.
No, I'm saying the opposite. What if they get rid of that extra width of the curb cut, they make standard.
Oh, they just wouldn't do that. I tried. So did Sherry.
So these are unique lots. When we placed the water meters as we were negotiating with the developer, we said we knew we had narrower lots than we have other lots, and we had the standard for 30-foot driveways. And so when we calculated it, we decided that we asked the developer to put the water meters dead center in the lot so that on either side of the water meter, a 30-foot driveway would fit. Mm. Because they want to site their house not in the center of the lot to take advantage of views across the street from them in between two houses, they don't want to move it so that they're in conformance. They can get a permit with just 30 feet, but it still makes their driveway a little bit goofy. But I think they're doing that because of the RV pad. So I think they want a little more room when they pull into the street, and then they can back up their trailer up to the side of the house.
Okay, I was just sure,
that's my perception.
Because that's the only reason
well.
They're not making the width, so the rest of it's fine.
We're in agreeance.
All right, anybody else? If not,
I'm prepared to offer a motion. So Commissioner Jorgensen, I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for a 32-foot wide driveway at 903 Winter Lane with no conditions.
Thank you. That's Commissioner Jorgensen. Any comments on the motion? And is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Commissioner Ward. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, motion carries. That will put us to our number four agenda item, consideration of a conditional use permit for the Bridger Towing LLC located at 735 West, 200 North. Amber Snyder is the applicant. Is she here today? No? Okay.
Yeah, no.
Take us away, Mackenzie.
Alrighty, so Bridger Towing has submitted a business license and a conditional use permit to operate at 735 West, 200 North, which is part of our manufacturing distribution zone where tow yards and impound lots require a conditional use permit. So a little background, just so you guys are all aware, Bridger Towing used to be located at 68 North, 640 West, where numerous tow companies all operated out of the same location, which we see again here. The reason they do that is so that they can be on the police circulation so that because the police call out just on a rotation list for tow trucks. So if they have multiple tow trucks under the same family, it's the same company, they are able to get more calls and more profit, of course. So it's not abnormal. We saw it over at 68 North, 640 West. And then again, it's looking like it's happening here. The owner of Bridger Towing is different than the other owners of the businesses that are already existing here, but they are some relation, I don't know. Over at 68 North, 640 West, tow yards were brought to the city's attention because of code compliance. There was some issues we had with them parking in the park strip, in the street, in the fire access lanes, anywhere they could park, they were parking these damaged and salvaged vehicles. And it became a hazard, and also when they were parking in the street, it was causing issues for their neighbor. So We are hyper aware of tow yards, and because of that, we are asking the Planning Commission to take careful consideration concerning the quantity of cars that can be stored at one location, and even like how they're stored and that type of thing. So with that background in mind, this new location at 735 West 200 North currently has four other tow companies that are actively operating out of it. They are shown right here on the screen. As you can see, Bridger Towing is outlined in the darker red, and they have a decent sized area. Bridger Towing has told us that they will not store more than 10 cars on that outdoor storage area for more than 30 days, and then it should circulate through. And then because they are very aware of the other businesses, they were able to tell me that the other sections of the tow yard will only store 6 to 10, depending on which tow yard it is and how much space it has. In the center, they have a little maneuvering area for the tow trucks, and then as you can see, their access is coming off of 200, I believe. Or is that 700? Sherry?
Yeah, 200.
That's 200. Okay. All right. So they are not operating at all within the building of this location. There's a welding company and then another business that operates within the building. The tow yard is strictly outside. And for that reason, there is no employees at this location. It's just a storage yard. On occasion, there will be a tow truck coming in to move cars or meet with an owner of a vehicle to release it and that type of thing. I asked where the tow trucks would be stored at nighttime, and they said there will be no tow trucks at this location because they are taken home with the driver every night. So, as far as parking is concerned, we don't have a specific code for impound lots or tow yards, and they being the applicant, has provided a total of 4 parking stalls for employees and guests, which will be up by Ogden Auto, where you can see a truck and a couple of motorcycles up there. So the Development Review Committee and the Community Development Director have all agreed that 4 parking stalls would be sufficient for this use because it is just storage. And those parking stalls will need to be maintained as parking stalls for customers, employees, guests. It cannot be used for storage of damaged vehicles. So this is a part that we need your guys' help with. So right now, this property is not in compliance with our outdoor storage code. Our outdoor storage code requires that any sort of outdoor storage is properly screened with a decorative solid wall constructed of masonry or concrete tilt-up panels. And then also they have to be a minimum of 6 feet tall. It specifically calls out that chain link with the vinyl slats is not an acceptable screening method. So moving on from that, all outdoor storage areas have to be a minimum of 20 feet away from the street right-of-way and should be buffered by a improved vegetated landscaping area. So right now, the property is not in compliance with that because it has a chain link fence with vinyl slats all the way around it. And then in addition to that, the side on 200 North is 25 feet away from, the fence is 25 feet away from the street, and then 10 feet away from 700 West. So they're meeting the 20-foot setback on the one side, but not on the other. And then right now, and I think my next picture, you can see it's not landscaped. It has gravel, mulch type of stuff, and then some decorative boulders. So city code states that as of March 6, 2018, the outdoor storage existing or permitted prior shall not be enlarged, extended, or replaced except in strict compliance with all requirements of this title. Non-conforming property owners shall only be required to comply with provisions contained herein upon application for a site plan amendment, conditional use permit, expansion, change of primary use of the property, or subdivision. So essentially that's saying that if this property owner came in and wanted to do a site plan or a conditional use permit, they would need to bring the property into compliance concerning outdoor storage. The reason staff is a little leery about strictly enforcing that without your guys' consent and approval is because in 2019, there were the other four tow yards received business licenses and were not required to first get a conditional use permit. They were grandfathered in under one that was rolling from 2013, and they were not required to bring the property into compliance. So we did not require them to do it. I don't know how you all feel about that. Sherry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make a little clarification on that. So the other business licenses prior to us changing the code and the other tow companies that we issued here, when you have a conditional use permit, it's actually attached to the property. It's not attached to the business itself. And so where this property already had a conditional use permit from 2013, it had been our policy that provided that all of the new tow companies abided by all of the previous conditions of the 2013 one, which is standard that we'd done on all conditional use permits, that they were approved to get a business license under that same conditional use permit. We have since that time run into a problem where we're finding that new tow truck operators don't understand the gravity or the importance of the conditions that were set as part of the conditional use permit. So as a policy, we've decided that we will bring them, each and every one of them, forward if the property's not in compliance, which this property is not. And that's because of what happened at
648 North, 640 West.
And it was a little more complicated because it had a couple of different uses on it. It had an automobile dealership in the front, and then it had several tow companies, and then the owner of the automobile dealership was parking so many vehicles in the drive aisles, in the park strip, on the landscaped areas, out in the street, and then there was no room for the tow trucks, plus then the tow truck companies that were operating there, not just Bridger, they were the other companies that were associated with the owner of the car dealership. They were bringing in way too many cars and totally stacking the area that they had for the tow yard, that there was just no room to move. And this caused a dispute between those business operators and the owner of the property, who had to evict them as part of this zoning compliance and bringing that property. So that's kind of complicated and doesn't have a lot to do with this, except for in the policy that we wanted to bring forth every conditional use permit. So when we started looking at this, then I was like, well, the outdoor storage is out of compliance, and we did adopt that new rule. The reason we got the fence with the slats in the first place was prior to us updating that code, where the code said that it required a wall. Previous planning commissions interpreted wall to mean chain link with slats. When we revised that ordinance so that it specifically said a wall is not chain link with slats, and then we wanted to make sure that we brought these areas into compliance as we move forward. So the difficulty in this one is that we did issue a couple of business licenses. The second one is that this is one tow company that's leasing a small area on this property, so this is going to fall back to the owner or all on this one tow company. So if we want to go forward with a condition that they need to bring that up to it, I would recommend that we give them some time to do that and not require it to be done within 30 days or something, but give them some amount of time that would be appropriate to get that brought up to compliance.
That is a good thing to remember. They are only a tenant occupying that red area that's bolded. So, do you guys want to discuss that or have any questions before I move on, since we're already on this topic?
So Sherry, just as a point of clarification, I certainly understand the point about providing some flexibility on the timeline and that. Is that something that we would just want to defer to the staff and allow you to set that, or is that something that would be ideally integrated into this, like an allowance for X number of months to come into compliance? What would be your suggestion, or what would be your thought on that?
Well, as we're moving into winter, I say you either give them like 60 to 90 days or you give them further time into the spring if you think that's not long enough to do it, just because of the supply chain issues now with fencing and solid walls, it may take a little bit longer.
And in addition to that, I would say that we would, if we are going to require them to bring it into compliance, it needs to be a cut and dry condition that I can list on the actual permit that I give them, because then we have the paper trail in the event that I have to enforce. So I would say we need to be as specific as possible and also be mindful that it is almost winter and we are going to require some vegetation. And so I think if we do set a timeline, it's got to be into next year, in my opinion.
So I would probably recommend something like June 1st, if you were going to wait that long. June 1st of 2022, that would be my suggestion.
I have a couple questions. The parking stalls that are indicated here with the green, are those going to be striped, or are they just saying this is where it's supposed to be?
That's another one where they're just saying it's where they're supposed to be. When we have business licenses come in, when it's a tenant type of relationship where a lot of them are temporary or just outdoor storage, that kind of thing, I haven't been requiring them to actually paint the stalls. Some of them we've required to have proper signage. So we had Illustrious Industries in here last fall. It was when I first started. And we required them to put some sort of signing to show that these were, in fact, parking areas. And that way they just put, like, little buckets with concrete in them and a little makeshift sign just to show people if they needed a park there, they could. But they didn't have to do major tenant improvements to the property because they are just a tenant.
The other businesses who were issued business licenses in 2019, when would those come due again? What's the time frame for that? Are those out to pasture?
So they would get approved every year.
Okay, so
in January when they reply.
So it was 2019. So it will come up again. So if we want to have the entire property brought up to code, we will have the opportunity.
Well, they won't come before the Planning Commission. They'll just come for a renewal of their business license.
So the decision we would make tonight would then
affect everyone.
Impact all how of that. Them. And then the property, the portion of the property that is not indicated by any red lines, there are a lot of cars up there at the top. Is that not storage, or what is that part?
I don't fully know. The boxes that are shown on here that have the names of the tow companies were all provided to me by Amber. She's the applicant, and she has a hand in every single application. She's the one that actually has been the applicant on every business license application for all of these tow yards here. So I would assume, just based off that everything you're seeing that's not part of the boxed-in areas and the turnaround area for the tow yard would be used by the other businesses that occupy the building, being the welding company and I can't remember the other one.
But I would say that if those other cars that are to the north there, if they're still there, because remember these are Google Earth images, they're not necessarily current images. Mm-hmm. If those vehicles are still there, then we'd probably need a clarification of what they are, if they're part of the tow companies or if they need to be disposed, because we don't have wrecking yards are not an approved use. So if those are just there and they're junk and somebody needs to deal with them, then they need to deal with them.
Yeah, and I did drive by the property to try to investigate before I brought it before you guys. And though we don't allow vinyl slats, it is hard to see what's going on from your car. So I don't know if those vehicles are still there.
Okay, who's that?
Well, I have more. So are you guys good with me moving on from this outdoor storage? Okay. So this one's not as applicable. It's just something so you guys are aware. When there is a state impound lot that is a certified state impound lot, they have to get permission or approval from the Utah State Tax Code, or that's what regulates it. In the paper packets I provided you, there is a letter from the Utah State Tax Commission granting approval to this location as a off-site storage yard. So underneath the subsection Utah State Tax Code, there is the list of the things that they require of their certified tow yards. I went through it just to kind of see how it would tie into what we require and what that would mean for this applicant. So they had to get the sign, which we're going, I don't know if it's listed on the conditions, but we may want to add that they need to get proper permitting for their signs as a condition. The yard has to be surfaced or hard surfaced with a gravel, a road base, asphalt, that type of thing. And then when they have a centrally located office, they're allowed to have these tow yards that are off site as long as they're in a certain distance, which this one was approved as. One thing I did want to note on here is that the Utah State Tax Commission requires that a 6-foot chain link or similar fence topped with 3 strands of barbed wire or razor security must surround the yard. So for their side of things, they're compliant with that. We require the wall. And that's pretty much it. I just wanted you guys to have that information. So at this point, the DRC is recommending that the Planning Commission approve the business or the conditional use permit for Bridger Towing LLC located at 735 West 200 North with the conditions that, one, they maintain and provide a minimum of 4 parking spaces for employees and customers. 2, the storage of impounded vehicles by Bridger Towing shall be limited to a maximum of 30 vehicles, with no single vehicle being stored greater than 30 days.
30 or 10 vehicles?
10 vehicles. 10. For this business license. And then it's 10 vehicles, 30 days. And then the tow truck shall not be stored on site overnight, nor stored or parked on the street. Very specific there. And then outdoor storage fence and screening shall be brought into compliance with the current standard adopted. That last condition is subject to what you guys decide. So I will take any questions.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Does anyone have questions they want to start with?
I have a question. The fencing that is required under code, does it mention anything about barbed wire at the top?
No.
So if they are to come into code with what we would ask, which is the concrete or masonry, would they then fall out of compliance with what the state is asking them to do?
It says on their state one that it has to be of or similar of fencing. So I would say I would have to talk to the state, or they would, but if they did the wall, concrete wall, whatever we require for the actual outdoor storage, and then put the barbed wire on top, they would still be in compliance, assuming it's still the 6 feet.
So we wouldn't prohibit them from doing that if they wanted to add that to whatever else is required for our city? They could do the masonry and then have barbed wire on top if they needed.
Yes, yes. So they would still be in compliance with us and them, if I'm interpreting this, the Utah State Tax Commission's code, as they interpret it.
Great, thank you.
And I did just want to note for the record that the State Tax Commission requires either barbed wire or razor wire. Our code does not allow razor wire. In fact, it specifically prohibits razor wire because it's so dangerous. So the 3-strand barbed wire is fine, but not razor wire.
So should we finish up the discussion about bringing the outdoor storage up to code, how everyone feels about that on the property, and then we can move on to any of the next items? So how are people feeling about the requirement to bring that up to code? Any comments?
It seems appropriate. The only thing that's a little awkward is you've got all of these other, you know, interests in the property that are there, and only one, you know, ostensibly is being burdened through this process. I do think it's the right thing to do, and I suppose they can work that out amongst themselves who bears the cost of that. But anyway, that's the wrinkle. It's kind of like, you know, the horse is out of the barn.
If we gave them, though, until, say, June 2022, then we would require the rest of the, in order to get their business license, the rest of them would have to also be in compliance. So technically everyone would have to be on the same page by June 2021. So to me, it seems like kind of a good opportunity to kind of include everyone in getting up to getting compliant.
So, and that is a good point. I have a question for Sherry following that. So if we do permit this and issue the conditional use permit so that I then can approve the business license, if they are not in compliance by June 2022 or whatever is decided, can we then specifically say in the condition that the business license will be revoked? Or how would that work?
I think what would happen is we would start a zoning compliance case against them if they failed to comply and bring it up to the standard. And then one of the tools is to revoke the conditional use permit and business license, and that would have to come back before the Planning Commission. So they would have to come back to you and explain why they didn't get it put up. And then you would decide whether or not to revoke it.
Okay, thanks. Any other comments on bringing the storage fence up to code?
I have a question. So all of the conditions that are listed in the conditional use permit, as I'm understanding, they are all in the code as it stands. So the only reason why they're needing a conditional use permit is because they are not meeting code. Is that right? Like if we attach this conditional use permit to this property, all we're basically asking is whomever uses this property, please just keep the code.
That and there is right? some stuff in here that is specific to this property where like the four parking spaces, we have provided that because it's outside of code. And then in addition to that, from the experience we gained from 68 North, we have become a lot more explicit in what we're saying on the conditional use permit. And we've actually created a formal conditional use permit that we never had before that just straight up outlines exactly what the conditions are, where we may be repetitive towards our code. And sometimes I even cite our code in those conditions, but it helps us that when, if and when, hopefully not, we have to take this before the administrative law judge, it's cut and dry, laid out on a signed document that was issued and approved by you guys. Do you have something to add?
And by being a little bit flexible in the condition and giving them some time to bring it into compliance, that is a mitigating circumstances that we're looking at it going, look, we know you're going to have to go to the owner of this property, and we know that he's going to have to go to all the other tenants, and they're going to have to work this out and get it done. It gives them that time, and it brings a matter of, you know, fairness in, instead of saying, okay, you're not getting your license until you do this. Could handicap just this one business where we've already got the other businesses still operating.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like we're in agreement with bringing it up to code with the outdoor storage, and then June 2022 is, does anyone have a comment about that time frame?
June 1, 2022.
Yeah. Okay. I have just one more question, sorry. So regarding the setbacks, it seems like they also would have to bring that in compliance by moving it 10 additional feet. Would that impact the storage space of Bridger Towing? Like, would they still be able to fit 10 cars?
Yeah, because there's only junk over there.
I don't think it will, because it's that one along the north property line, and that's beyond where
I see.
Where yeah, that
okay,
is.
Great.
I think it would just clean up the property.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, thank you.
There might not be junk, I apologize.
All right, let's address the landscaping. Does anyone have comments about the landscaping requirement, asking them to bring up the landscaping?
So the landscaping can still be xeriscaped, but it does require some vegetative materials in it, not just rocks. So they just need to add some plant materials, whether that's street trees or some, you know, the tall grasses or
the desert decorative bushes. That
can they add landscaping that would not require irrigation?
Yes.
So it won't mean you have to also install irrigation here. They can pick things that
so,
would just,
as long as they can get them watered somehow.
The code says that the landscape buffer must have a mixture of evergreens and deciduous trees, shrubs, lawn, or other vegetative ground cover, or up to 50% non-vegetative mulch. So that's specifically what it says. It does allow flexibility.
I feel empathy for the property owner. This is a lot of change and potentially a lot of cost, particularly the fencing. That's not going to be cheap. But I also do think code is there for a reason. And as properties come up that are not in compliance with the code, I support the idea that we ask them to do that, give them time. So I have empathy for the landowner, but I do feel like that's what we should do.
Thank you. Do we need to add anything about landscaping in the motion?
No, because that's part of the outdoor storage code.
Okay.
It's not its own landscaping thing.
Okay. Does anyone else have any other comments or questions?
One more question, maybe. And this might be a conversation for another time. As we bring these other entities into compliance, would they have to also provide parking? No,
because they've already been issued their business licenses. And I think a lot of the ones that I've seen don't even really have parking that was provided. And if they did, it was just like, yeah, we have space for 50 cars, you know, that are guests and employees, because they do have that big parking area. I believe I'm the first one to require they have a designated place and quantity for customers and employees and no one else, because that was our problem at the other location.
So that's separate from the outdoor storage compliance?
Yes.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, that's just for their business license as a use.
Okay, any thoughts on adding the proper permitting for their sign in as a condition?
What would they have to change from the sign that they have here that's included in the packet? What do they have to change to make it in compliance?
It's not necessarily a change thing, it's just proper permitting. Correct, Trey?
They just need a sign permit.
They didn't go through the proper process, they just threw their sign up and then they brought it to my attention. So
that seems fine with me then.
All right, any other comments or?
So just on the issue of landscaping, I do think there are some communities that are getting kudos for some of their ordinances, like Layton City with, you know, xeriscaping and reduced water use in mind. I think at some point, you know, I know we have a lot of things that we need to do, but I do think it would behoove us to look at that and see if there's changes and if there's anything we ought to do to be a little more drought conscious in terms of our requirements. I'm not saying that that is the case, but I think we ought to look at what best practice is on that.
Add that to the list, Sherry. Put it on
That's
the bike rack.
I was
rack.
Just thinking. While you guys are thinking, Weber Basin Conservancy, the water district, did reach out to me over the summer. And I forwarded it on to Ken because Sherry was out when this all happened. So our city manager is at least aware of what their attempts are, and I don't know what's happening with that, but we have been corresponding.
All right, if anybody wants to make a motion or any more comments or discussion.
In the interest of time, I'll offer a motion. Essentially, it's going to be the draft motion with the addition of a date specific for compliance. So, Commissioner Jorgensen, I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for the Bridger Towing LLC located at 735 West 200 North with the following conditions. One, maintain and provide a minimum of 4 parking spaces for employees and customers. Two, storage of impounded vehicles by Bridger Towing should be limited to a maximum of 10 vehicles, with no single vehicle being stored for greater than 30 days. Three, tow trucks shall not be stored on site overnight nor stored parked on the street. Four, outdoor storage fence and screening shall be brought into compliance with current standard adopted by June 1st, 2022.
And did we want to add a 5 for proper permitting of sign? Okay, any comments on the motion? All right, and then do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Wait, aye. Did we want to amend it before we vote?
I think you did.
Did you? Or should we formally amend it after it's been presented?
I think he was still presenting it, so I don't even think you'd have to amend it.
Okay.
I think it was still the same. You know, there was a pause, and then you just added one more. I don't think it's an amendment.
So condition 5 would be to get a proper sign permit for the business sign at the property.
Okay.
Still seconded.
Second with Commissioner Van Langeveld. All right.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, the motion carries. That number five on the agenda, consideration of a conditional use permit for Celestial Auto Pros LLC located at 847 North Point Circle. Jeffrey Edeman, applicant. Is Jeffrey here? Thank you for being here. All right, Mackenzie.
Okay, so this one will be a little bit easier for us. All right, so Celestial Auto Pros is a company that specializes in doing clear bra, paint protection films, window tinting, and ceramic coatings on vehicles and boats. They are wanting to locate their business to 847 North Point Circle, which is zoned general commercial. And as such, automotive body paint and interior and maintenance is a conditional use, which is why they're here before us today. So, let's go on here. Alrighty, so there will be no outdoor storage at this location. All of the work and storage or whatever else is going to happen inside of the building. They will operate between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Sunday, and the business currently employs one person, but plans to gain an additional two full-time employees by the end of 2021. City Code 10-6-5 requires that auto repair body shops and part businesses provide three parking stalls per service bay that can be parked in tandem, plus one additional stall per 300 square feet of retail floor area. This business does not have a floor area for retail at all, and they have one service bay. They have provided six parking stalls, which is compliant with code, so no concerns there. All of the inventory, including like the chemicals or whatever they use on the vehicles, will be stored in a locked cabinet. And the applicant has made an effort to note that the business activities will not result in any additional wastewater or environmental impacts due to hazardous chemicals or solvents. And yeah, the DRC is recommending approval of this conditional use permit for Celestial Auto Pros LLC, located at 847 North Point Circle with no conditions.
Okay, thank you. Does the applicant want to add anything to that, or you're good? All right. Any questions or comments?
That you're not using the whole property then. There's something else that's operating there. What else is there?
So to answer into the mic for him, there are two other businesses, Icon Glass Company and Peak Adventure Rentals. And he did tell me that eventually he might want to expand as the space becomes available, but right now he's just in one little section. So.
Okay. Any other questions or comments or motion?
I'll make a motion. This is Commissioner Moss. I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for Celestial Auto Pros LLC located at 847 North Point Circle with no conditions.
Thank you, Commissioner Moss. Any comments on the motion? And a second?
I'll second.
Okay, that's Commissioner Tucker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries. All right, we wish you luck. Glad you're here.
Are you the one employee that will be there? Are you the one employee that will be there working? That's exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're glad you're here in North Salt Lake. All right, agenda item number six, consideration of preliminary plat, final plat, and site plan for Williamsburg Luxury Apartments at 256 South Highway 89. Castlewood Development. Haley Pratt is the applicant, and applicant is here. Yes, all right, Sherry.
Okay, so this is the culmination. I think this will be the last time that you're on your agenda for the Williamsburg project. Very long 6 years.
It's been a very long 6 years that we've been working on this project, so I think we're at the end now and actually going to start building soon, so I'm really excited about that. Just to give you a little bit of background, the City Council approved the General Development Plan for Williamsburg Luxury Apartments on October 2nd of 2018. In 2019, it was amended with a change of architecture and a change of developer. Since that time, it's now got another change of developer, and it's came back from you a few months ago, or actually it was last year. On April 6th of 2021, the City Council approved the amended general development plan and increased the density to 246 units with the parking ratio of 1.8 spaces per stall. And then, of course, the condition that one space be required for each unit that cannot be unbundled and rented separately. So in review of this, that what the applicant is doing on this is that for financing, they need to separate lots one and two. Lot two will have all of the apartments on it. Lot one will have the commercial structure, just because of the financing for commercial versus residential is so different that it makes more sense. So they have asked for a plat approval on this. We are bringing preliminary plan and final plat before you because it's just not a complicated subdivision. There's a cross easement access that's been provided for it. Each of the lots meet the minimum standards for size and frontage. There are some utilities that are on this property that are the city owned, so there's some storm water trunk lines that go through this property that will be moved as part of the construction, kind of just rearranged so that it's out of the way and makes more sense. But we have a blanket easement across the property for the maintenance of those lines, as well as for the water meters when we need to go in and read those each month. They are providing a trail segment, a connection from the intersection, or from Highway 89, will go down from the north. So what you would see there in the upper left-hand corner, the trail segment will go along that north property line, and then it will connect into that trail that's going to run along I-15 and get you to Hatch Park. So we're currently working on grant proposals to build that last segment that will go through the North Ridge Apartments and alleys, seeking those out. So this will be a great connection for people to get back and forth to the park without having to be on Highway 89. You know, they can be on a nice trail and get there safely. Let's see. So there were a couple of issues with the plat that needed to be taken care of. There is a small discrepancy on the title report for the parcel boundaries between, on the south property line, between UDOT and this property owner. There's a couple of overlapping surveys. So they need to correct those and work through that before we record the final plat. It won't affect their parking, it won't affect anything, because we can move everything around just a little bit and put more landscaping there if we have to. But I'm satisfied with what I've seen so far, that they'll be able to get that worked out before the final plat is recorded. And then there were just a couple of little typos in some of the notes that needed to be corrected, and I've submitted those to the applicant to fix that. Then the second part of the application is the actual final site plan. So that was for the subdivision plat. Then this is for the site plan itself. And I'm just going to run through these really quickly. The site plan is in compliance with the general development plan as was previously approved. This one shows the sidewalk. If you remember, we had the requirement that the sidewalk go all the way down to Eagle Gate, so that if an intersection is built there, if we get a light there, then we will have a sidewalk that goes all the way to the crosswalk that will be provided. The site plan has been reviewed for conformance with the development agreement, the city code, and we have found those to be in compliance. There are a couple of minor red line corrections in some of the construction drawings that the engineer has identified, and those have been given to the developer as well to correct those. There is one issue, and it's related to the retaining walls that you see here along the west property line, which would be the bottom of the page. You can see the little hatch marks there. So our ordinance states that retaining walls can only be a maximum height of 9 feet. Because of the elevation change on this, the highest part of the wall is about 14 feet. And so normally what we would do is we'd say in our ordinance, you have to stop at 9 feet, and then you have to go at least so many feet back and then put another wall to make the whole 14 feet. Because of the alignment of this property with the I-215 off-ramp from I-215 off onto northbound I-15. The putting in a tiered system would not be the best or most ideal because you wouldn't be able to get down to that tiered portion to landscape it. There's not really any need for it. And so what we are recommending as a DRC is that the applicants obtain a variance from the hearing officer. Staff is in support of it. We've reviewed the criteria for a variance. We feel it meets it very, very well because it would be a hardship that is topographical in nature and it's not created by themselves, and then staff will support it. As far as aesthetically, it will be a better wall to have the 14 feet than it would be to have 2 7-foot walls divided by 3 feet with some landscaping in there that we can't water, we can't get to, and it's just going to grow weeds. So that's going to be our position. Otherwise, they still do have enough room if they had to tier it, if they didn't get the variance, but we would, as staff, want to recommend that they get that variance granted to them. So I think there was a very good chance of getting that. But with that, so the DRC has reviewed this and they are recommending approval of the preliminary plan and final plat for Williamsburg Park subdivision and the final site plan for Williamsburg apartment, subject to the 3 conditions that I have listed there. One is correction or clarification on the title report of the parcel boundary description. 2 is the correction of the typo in the plat note, and then the engineering corrections on the construction plans. And that 3, a variance be obtained for the retaining walls that is higher than 9 feet, or the wall be tiered to less than 9 feet each. And I'll just run through the rest of these drawings here. I think the landscape is probably the most interesting one. I think they've done a really great job with the landscaping, and I'm very pleased with the way this project is going to turn out. And you can see all the great trees that we're going to have along Highway 89. So I'm excited to see this project come out of the ground.
Thank you. Okay, any comments or questions?
If I remember last time we saw this, the commercial building was going to be occupied by Chili Amore. Is that?
They had stated they would like to have Chili Amore be there. They don't have a signed contract with them. I mean, it'll be a matter of negotiating the lease there. But there will be a space there that could be used for Chili Amore or a different restaurant and some office space.
Great.
So we're hopeful.
Yeah, hope so.
if they can swing the... If the restaurant owners can work out the right deal, then I'm sure they'll stay.
That'd be great. All right, anything else? Any other comments? No? All right, if anyone wants to make a motion. Or we can discuss more.
I'll make the motion. I move that the Planning Commission recommends to the City Council the approval of the preliminary plan and final plat for Williamsburg Park subdivision and final site plan for Williamsburg Apartments, subject to the following conditions. 1, correction or clarification on title report of parcel boundary description. 2, corrected typo in plat note and any engineer red line on construction plans. And 3, a variance is obtained for a retaining wall taller than 9 feet or the wall be tiered to less than 9 feet each.
Great, thank you, Commissioner Ward. Any comments or discussion on the motion? And a second?
I'll second. Commissioner Tucker.
Thank you. And all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Okay, the motion carries. I'm very excited about this project.
Yeah.
It feels like one of the wins of adding density to the right spot in your city.
Exactly.
That is the spot to do it. So.
Madam Chair, I would like to say that we've only been around for 1 of those 6 years.
Well, we are very excited. It looks great. It's been great to work with you guys.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you. Okay, and report on City Council items. Sherry.
So we didn't have any
Sorry. We didn't have any action items go from the Planning Commission to the City Council last week. The only items I had on the agenda related to some resolutions for some really cool grant applications that we're making that you might be interested in. Like, we're applying for a FEMA grant that will provide us with 10 generators for our various wells around the city, so that if the power goes out, we would still be able to get water. And we've been told by the state that we have a really good chance of getting that. And then some other applications for trail segments, and can't remember what the third one was because there were three, but oh yeah, the sidewalk on Overland Drive, signing the contract. Oh. So over by the trailer park on 1100 North along Overland Drive, Colonial Woods, we're going to put in a sidewalk there that we were able to get a CDBG grant for that area because of the low-income nature of the housing park. We were able to get that money, and that'll help provide a nice access for the people at the south end of the park to get up to 1100 North if they wanted to get on the bus or
that's great,
walk somewhere.
That's all exciting. Just out of curiosity, you had mentioned earlier the discussion with UDOT about trying to get another traffic light on Highway 89 down at Orchard. I mean, that seems like that would be important to have. That seems like a very dangerous intersection.
So all of the this is my experience with UDOT. Hopefully they don't read the minutes, but so UDOT is what they want you to have a warrant study, and because there's no light there, people don't use that intersection as much, so there's not enough use to warrant a light being there. Mm-hmm. Because it's so dangerous, people don't go there. They need to be able to accept a model that shows if you do build a light, then this is what the traffic pattern will have, which is why we've asked for, and we've actually started, a traffic circulation study of the town center and what would happen if we changed the intersection at the roundabout, or we changed the intersection on Highway 89 at Eagle Ridge, and then if we added a light there. So we're going to have some of that data so that we can go back to UDOT and ask them. So what I like to say about UDOT is it's like asking your mom and dad for something, and they say no, and then you just keep asking until they say yes. And so we continually work on UDOT and remind them of this problem, and then when we have the data, we really think that's going to go a lot further, and especially with Village Station being built.
Yeah, I don't know if we've had accidents or not, but that's a stretch of road where people have not slowed down to the posted speed limit. They're still going really fast all the way to Eagle Ridge.
Really fast.
And there is a number of vehicles that do make left turns, and oftentimes they're trying to get up to traffic speed. People are accelerating up to 50, so that's one of those where I think
that's a really scary
I haven't seen bad accidents, but personally, but it seems like they're inevitable.
I think it's really dangerous, and I think most people avoid it just because of that danger. I mean, it's very easy to see. Then there, along with that, and there's another conversation that we're going to be having. It relates to the gravel pits and the gravel trucks that go through there, because if you may know, that street has been under construction now with Village Station going and then widening the street and putting the parking in the center and whatnot. So the trucks are having to find their way around and go down into Salt Lake County and come back up on Beck Street. And so I'm hoping that they'll find that that's really not that inconvenient. I don't believe that it is a great inconvenience to them to go that direction and not come through our new project that's going to be there, because that's just too big of a conflict. And I believe the design of the new street will discourage that as well. So that's something that they want us to put a different road in so they can get there and want the city to pay for it. And that's probably not going to happen.
In my professional experience, 9 times out of 10, UDOT is not going to build that signal just based off the warrant study. However, you're right about the badgering. It draws attention and it expedites their process for when the volumes are warranted, then they have that application right there.
And so when we can show them that we're bringing Village Station online, yeah, and we're adding, you know, up to 400 more residential units on that area, and the stress that that's going to put on Eagle Ridge, I think they'll have to address that, because that adding that much more traffic to the roundabout and the intersection with Eagle Ridge and Highway 89 is definitely going to show that that intersection is taxed. And we'll be more taxed when we get the other ones in, and we'll
warrant the study. It's wishful thinking to think it's going to happen before the project's complete, but if you badger them enough, they'll have the signal ready to go in 3 months after the project's done.
Right. That's been my experience in 20 years, so you just keep asking them. And then they get tired of having you ask, and they say yes.
Mic's off. I had a small correction on line 265. The word there is area, and it just says R, so just adding an A to that on line 265. Any other comments? All right, and a motion.
This is Commissioner Jorgensen. I move that the August 24th 2021 meeting minutes as amended be approved.
Great, thank you. And a second?
Second, Commissioner Ward.
Thank you. And all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All right, and we're adjourned.
Did everybody enjoy the conference that went? Did you guys enjoy the conference? Those of you, did you guys enjoy the conference that? It was fun, huh? Even though we didn't get lunch until